The other women in the club had been ghosts at first. It seemed as if they vanished, just as Bian at the bathroom, leaving bare, wet footprints on the linoleum, steam from a bath fogging the mirror, the smell of their talcum powder softening the air, long, coarse hairs clogging the drain or reaching down the wall. These unseen women had been a source of endless fascination and speculation. Hidden away in her room after dinner, pretending to write letters or darn stockings, Bea would listen to their conversations in the corridor outside and notice that her needle or her pen had fallen still. She came to realise that a woman of 37, used to being careful with her clothes, didn't make much mending anyway. She had no one to write to, other than her sister and a couple of girls she had been at school with, and their letters were so brief and so infrequent that she struggled to fill more than a single sheet of paper in reply. She had grown tired of these feigned distractions, and then, simply curious. And so she began to leave her door open in the evenings, to nod and smile on the staircase and in the dining room. And gradually, the women dissolved from a jumble of dresses and scents and heels and high laughter and became distinct and separate. There was Lillian, red-haired and coal-eyed, who trailed scarves and the scent of rich perfume and who wanted to be a dancer like Isadora Duncan. There was an Irish girl with black hair and eyebrows and a pure white lock that lay across her forehead like lightning, and two or three girls from good families who had turned their backs on what their parents wanted for them and who were instead playing at being bohemian. These girls were different from any that Bea had met at home. They were the kind of colourful, bold girls she had half expected to find in London. But she had also found women like her, older women who had come to London alone, just as she had. Women like Alice, who blushed often and wore old-fashioned drooping hats over a great cloud of silvery fur hair. She taught French and Latin in a girls' school in Kensington, and was taking sculpture classes on Saturday mornings. And her friend, Ellen, a head taller than her, who worked in a newspaper office and had a room across the hallway, and who was unsmiling and clever and surprisingly kind. These were the sort of women that Bea had read about in novels and had hoped to meet. Interesting women who talked about art and politics and ideas. They argued over everything. The characters in the books they were reading, the relevance of the royal family, Ellen's insistence that everyone should have the vote. Bea had observed in a general way that the men in London were bolder than those at home. They stared at girls more brazenly, their eyes raking up and down, and she noticed that very few of them stared at her. Men raised their hats and offered up their seats because they noticed her skirts, not because they admired her face. She looked at the girls who were noticed and the women who were not and realised, one is invisible when one is neither young nor pretty. This felt like an extraordinary and significant discovery. But when she mentioned it to Ellen and Alice, she found that they had both come to similar conclusions already. It's ridiculous! Ellen was loud in her indignation. As though one is somehow less just because one is older. As though we weren't all getting older every day. But it's natural, said Alice. Don't you think so? I mean, men naturally look at younger girls, prettier girls. Why shouldn't they? A pretty girl is nice to look at. Not all of them, surely. And who decides what is pleasant to look at anyway? Who tells us this? I believe it's the same people who think up those awful names they give women like us. Blue stocking, spinster, for heaven's sake. Ellen shook her head. And all the while, unmarried men are slapped on the back and called lucky devils. She opened her hands wide. Why should it be this way? Who makes these rules? Ellen faced the world head on, interrogating it when it made no sense to her. And simply through being exposed to these kinds of conversations and noticing her own opinion of them, Bea felt that she was somehow growing into herself. As the months passed, she had grown used to the intimacies of cold creams and curlers, to women roaming the corridor in their dressing gowns, and had begun to form her own routines. And it seemed that each day she discovered something new about her own tastes. She learned that she liked the smell of garlic, that she preferred novels to poetry, Fry's Turkish Delight to Cadbury's Dairy Milk, that blue suited her better than green. She learned that she could attend church and revel in the stillness and the quiet beauty and feel no guilt that her belief in a just and merciful God had died with George. For the first time, her life was absolutely her own, and she might live it exactly as she pleased. On Lil Tierney's birthday, there was a memorable evening of dancing along the top corridor while Ellen wound the gramophone, and Bea quite forgot herself, forgot her large feet and wide shoulders, and how awkward she appeared in the mirror, and what people might think, and she laughed with the rest of them. Watching Lil spinning and spinning and holding out her arms and letting her red hair stream out behind her, she thought, whoever felt such vigour, such bursting excitement as this?